All right, we continue our study of the book of Proverbs, chapter 23 tonight. Chapter 23 is a very interesting chapter, giving us all kinds of etiquettes, warnings, and counsels of wisdom. The chapter deals with ways to advance and things to avoid. Normally, they go together. You need to avoid certain things if you want to advance. There's two simple parts to this chapter 23. First, we see the warnings of wisdom in the first 11 verses. And then we see the counsels of wisdom in verses 12 to 35. So Solomon says in chapter 23, when you sit down to eat with a ruler, consider carefully what is before you and put a knife to your throat if you are a man given to appetite. Do not desire his delicacies, his fancy food, for they are deceptive food. So if a young man is going to advance in social class, he must know how to conduct himself in the presence of rulers and important people. First, he is warned here about gluttony. When he eats with an influential person, he should consider what or who is before him. He should put a knife to his throat, that is, he should exercise restraint in eating and drinking. Then he should not desire He should not desire the king's fancy food, since they are deceitful food, Solomon said. They're bread of lies. The ruler's hospitality may have an ultimate purpose. It might be a test, testing the young man. So the verse suggests that he might be wining and dining him in order to influence him in some way. Then Solomon says, do not overwork to be rich. Because of your own understanding, cease. Will you set your eyes on that which is not? For riches certainly make themselves wings. They fly away like an eagle towards heaven. Do not eat the bread of the miser, nor desire his delicacies. For as he thinks in his heart, so is he. Eat and drink, he says to you, but his heart is not with you. The morsel you have eaten, you will vomit up and waste your pleasant words. Do not speak in the hearing of a fool, for he will despise the wisdom of your words. Do not remove the ancient landmark, nor enter the fields of the fatherless, for their Redeemer is mighty. He will plead their cause against you. So we see here several things to avoid. Solomon listed several practices that should be avoided by the one who is pursuing wisdom. The first one is fixation with wealth, verses 4 and 5. Spending your life pursuing false values and putting your trust in what does not last. Do not make the acquisition of wealth the primary aim of your life. A fixation on wealth leads to evil doing, also to neglect of more important things. Cease from your own understanding, Solomon says in verse 4. Riches have a way of growing wings and flying away, he says in verse 5. So the one thing to avoid is fixation with wealth. The next one, verses 6 to 8, is dining with misers. The follower of wisdom should not eat a meal with a stingy person, verse 6. He may extend a cordial invitation, but throughout the whole meal he is calculating what his hospitality will cost him. Even though he invites the guests to eat and drink, go ahead, eat and drink, in verse 7, his heart is not in his words. He is too worried about the cost. It's not what he says that counts, but what he thinks. When the guest feels the attitude of the host, the food grows upsetting in his stomach, verse 7. And the vomit causes the guest to lose the pleasant words that he wouldn't normally say to the host when he had enjoyed a fine evening. The third thing to avoid, conversation with fools. Verse 9, the follower of wisdom should waste no words on a fool. If one has to explain everything, he is wasting his time. Remember Matthew 7, 6, casting your pearl to the swines. Even if a fool grasps what is said, he will not appreciate its wisdom. So avoid conversation with fools. The next thing, number 4, is avoid moving the landmark, the boundaries, verses 10 and 11. For the second time, Solomon urges the reader to avoid moving the border stones. He did that in chapter 22, verse 28. And this might indicate that at the time these proverbs were composed, dishonest land acquisition was a major problem in Israel. One who walks in the path of wisdom should respect the rights of the defenseless, the orphan, the widows. He should not try to seize their property by moving the landmarks. He should not even trespass into the fields of the orphans for the purpose of either damaging or stealing things or appropriating property. The reason for it is in verse 11. Solomon is clear. Their Redeemer is God himself, and he is mighty. So that's the first part that we have here, the warnings of wisdom. Verse 12, we see the counsels of wisdom. The next verses contains a number of short instruction. In verses 12 to 14, Solomon deals with two topics, instruction and discipline. There is no easy way to gain instruction. It requires discipline and application. Verse 12, apply your heart to instruction and apply your ears to words of knowledge. Disregard the ads that promises that it will come in three easy lessons. It is not a kindness to a child to allow him to run wild. The Bible does not condone tolerance or leniency when it comes to training children. It encourages correction with a rod and promises that the child will not die, verse 13. Do not withhold correction from a child, for if you beat him with a rod, he will not die. The beating will actually save him from a premature and reckless death. It will deliver his soul from hell. He says, you shall beat him with a rod and deliver his soul from hell. Verse 14. So instead of disciplining his wicked son, I don't know if you remember in 1 Samuel chapter 2, Eli simply asked them, why do you do such things? What kind of discipline is this? He nurtured a tolerance that brought ruin on his house, ruined his ministry, brought ruin on the priesthood, and ruin on the nation. And God said, you honor your son above me. And that's quite an accusation. I would not want God to tell me that. David and other men, good men, a man after God's own heart, he failed in the area of parental discipline. He never did not want to displease his son, Adonijah. He didn't want to correct him in 1 Kings chapter 1, verse 6. After making two treacherous attempts to seize the throne, Adonijah was killed by Solomon, the writer of this. God is right, man is wrong. Discipline is important, God says. In verses 15 to 21, Solomon deals with the issues of the heart. He says that, my son, if your heart is wise, my heart will rejoice. Indeed, I myself. Yes, my inmost being will rejoice when your lips speak right things. Do not let your heart envy sinners, but in the fear of the Lord continue all day long, for surely there is a hereafter, future life, and your hope will not be cut off. So a father rejoices when his son has a heart that is wise, verse 15, and has lips that speaks the truth, verse 16. The teacher experiences this same joy when his students receive wisdom and they share it with others. John said in his tiny little letter, it should be a postcard, but they call it the letter, 3 John, verse 4. He says, I have no greater joy than to hear that my children walk in truth. And when you would ask Chuck Smith to sign your book, a book that he wrote, very often he would put 3 John 4, because he said he had no greater joy than to hear that his spiritual children were walking in truth. The heart is to be free from envy, verse 17. Do not let your heart envy sinners. There is something better than to envy the prosperity of the wicked, and that is to live in constant fellowship with the Lord. Concern with the wicked brings discouragement. Concern with the Lord brings delight. So it's up to you what you want. You want discouragement or you want delight? So the lesson is to make communion with God the aim of your life, and to remember that there is a future day of reckoning for the wicked, and there is also a bright hope of reward for the righteous. What you see here is not all there is. God has much more on the other side of the grave than what he has here. The hereafter looks beyond death to a glorious future in heaven. The hope of reward will not be cut off at death, Solomon said in verse 18. In verses 19 to 21, the wise son is to wash his heart. Hear, my son, and be wise, and guide your heart in the way. Avoid some devastating vices like drunkenness and gluttony, in verse 20. Do not mix with wine bibbers or with gluttonous eaters of meat. Vegetarian people, they love this verse. For the drunker and the glutton will come to poverty, and drowsiness, laziness, will clothe a man with rags. So whatever others may do, an obedient son listens to instruction. He is wise and he guides his heart in the right way. That is the way of God. There are two kinds of voices, of vices here in this verse. Those who drink too much, the wine bibbers, and those who eat too much, the gluttons. And they both make bad company for anyone who wants the good life. If you want the good life, these are not the people to hang out with. Excess takes its toll. The drunkard and the glutton are headed for poverty, Solomon says in verse 21. The wise person regards gluttony as evil as drunkenness is. Overindulgence of any kind leads to carelessness and to ruin, and it clothes a person in rags. Then verse 22, he said, listen to your father who begot you, and do not despise your mother when she is old. Buy the truth and do not sell it. Also wisdom and instruction and understanding. The father of the righteous will greatly rejoice, and he who begets a wise child will delight in him. Let your father and your mother be glad, and let her who bore you rejoice. My son, give me your heart, and let your eyes observe my ways. For a harlot is a deep pit, and a seductress is a narrow well. She also lies in wait as for a victim, and increases the unfaithful among men. So this section deals with respect for parents, telling the truth and avoiding immorality. Three topics in this section. Young people should welcome advice from their father and not despise their mother when she's old. Verse 22. Old folks have years of experience behind them. They've seen a few things in their days. Young people should recognize this and should try to benefit as much as possible from their experience. We should be willing to pay a great price for the truth, Solomon suggests, and be unwilling to sell it at any cost. Verse 23, keep the truth. Do not sell it. Do not try to change it to lies. Keep it. The same goes for wisdom, instruction, understanding. We should spare no pains to acquire them, but never surrender them for anything in this world. The truth is priceless. Now, modern custom says, give father a tie on Father's Day. Give mother a box of chocolate on Mother's Day. I say give the chocolate to dad, but anyway. But more rewarding to parents than the tie or the chocolate is a son who lives wisely, son or daughter, and cautiously. Verse 24, right here. He who begets a wise child will delight in him. That's why Solomon said, let your father and your mother be glad, and let her who bore you rejoice. Verse 25. Then Solomon moves and he addresses immorality. He does that often in his book of Proverbs because it has always been an issue. Sexual misconduct. His heartfelt plea in verse 26 is, my son, give me your heart. And that plea introduces a stern warning against immorality. He is saying, listen to me carefully and observe the counsel that I give you. A prostitute is like a deep, disguised pit, a trap for the careless. She is a narrow well, in verse 27, easy to fall in but hard to get out of. And she lies in wait just like a thief would, in verse 28. She may have a compulsive hatred for men, and she inflicts her revenge on them by entangling them through deception, just like one hooks, a fish with a lure, with something shiny. Daily she adds to the list of unfaithful men whose marriages and families are torn apart. Happened then, happening today, and will happen again in life. Then verses 29 to 35, Solomon concludes the chapter with a warning against drunkenness. And he gives us a classic description of a drunkard. It's a real masterpiece. He brings all kinds of grief upon himself. He staggers from one sorrow to another. Verse 29. Who has woe? Who has sorrow? Who has contentions? Who has complaints? Who has wounds without cause? Who has redness of eyes? Those who linger long at the wine. Those who go in search of mixed wine. Do not look on the wine when it is red, when it sparkles in the cup, when it swirls around smoothly. At the last, it bites like a serpent and stings like a viper. Your eyes will see strange things. Your heart will utter perverse things. Yes, you will be like one who lies down in the midst of the sea, or one who lies at the top of the mast, saying, they have struck me, but I was not hurt. They have beaten me, but I do not feel it. When shall I awake that I may seek another drink? So his life is marked by contention, since he is forever trying to pick fights with others when he is drunk. He grumbles and complains continually, but it never dawns on him that he is the cause of all his troubles. He has bruises, he has wounds, he has a black eye from unnecessary fights. His eyes are blurry, they're bloodshot. The good-looking gal of last night looks real bad in the morning. He's got a problem with his eyes. He sits in the tavern all night long, consuming one drink after another, verse 30. He is warned against being fascinated by the clear red wine, by its brilliant sparkle, by the way it swirls smoothly in verse 31. But he does not listen. He is warned, but he does not listen. He suffers the consequences, which are like the bite of a serpent or the stings of a viper, verse 32. Poisonous and painful. His eyes see strange things. Verse 33, a reference to hallucination, the mental disturbances caused by excessive and prolonged use of liquor. His speech is distorted and vile. He reels to and fro unsteadily, as if he were lying down in the middle of the ocean, or perch on top of a mass as it rocks madly from one side to the other in verse 34. Someone has beaten him, but when he regains consciousness, he says that he was not hurt, verse 35. They attacked him, but he did not feel it. Booze makes him oblivious to danger. As soon as he is awake, he plans to go back to the bar again for another drink. Alcohol controls him, and he is a slave to it. How sad it is. But Solomon did beautiful with the pen writing this story. The main lesson of chapter 23 is the indulgence of the appetites is a sin that easily overcomes us. We should stop ourselves when in the presence of luxury, gluttony, or sensuality. Three things to be careful with. Chapter 24 concludes the first collection of Proverbs. Remember when we started chapter 10, we said there's a collection here from 10 to 24. The second collection will be chapter 25 to 30. 24 deals with how to relate with the wicked, the foolish, and the lazy. So Solomon will deal with three different types of people: the wicked, the foolish, the lazy. There's two main parts to this. We have the warnings of the wise in the first 22 verses. Then we have the sayings of the wise in verses 23 to 34. Solomon says, "Do not be envious of evil men, nor desire to be with them, for their heart devises violence, and their lips talk of troublemaking." So it is not wise to envy the success of evil men, or to desire their company because they are successful or they appear to be wealthy. They have a way of dragging others down to their level. What level? Their hearts plan violence, and their conversation centers on troublemaking, Solomon says in verse 2. In verses 3 to 9, we see the advantages of wisdom. And three things, three advantages. Number one, verses 3 and 4. Wisdom increases wealth. The house here may refer to a man's life. A great life is not built by wickedness, but by godly wisdom. Verse 3. Through wisdom, a house is built, and by understanding, it is established. Wickedness wrecks a life, but understanding makes it sturdy. Wickedness leaves it empty, but knowledge fills it out with precious and pleasant riches. He says in verse 4, "By knowledge, the rooms are filled with all precious and pleasant riches." So that's the first advantage. Wisdom will give you wealth. It will increase. It will build you a house and it will fill the rooms. Advantage number 2, verses 5 and 6. Wisdom increases strength. A wise man can apply great power more than a strong men. A man of brains is mightier than a man of muscle. War can be waged through wise counselor, and the more wise counselors there are, the better it is. And this is repeated a few times. Solomon repeated it in chapter 11, verse 14, and he repeated it in chapter 15, verse 22. He said it three times. A wise man is strong, yes, a man of knowledge increases strength. And by wise counsel, you will wage your own war, and in a multitude of counselor, there is safety. Advantage number 3, wisdom increases respect, verses 7 to 9. Wisdom is too high for a fool. He does not open his mouth in the gate. He who plots to do evil will be called a schemer, a conniver. The devising of foolishness is sin, and the scoffer is an abomination to man. So wisdom seemed to be forever beyond the grasp of a fool. In verse 7, he can never speak with authority like the elders did at the city gate. The one who uses his God-given faculties to invent new forms of evil earns the title, in verse 8, of master schemer, master conniver. The devising of foolishness is sin, verse 9. And the arrogant scoffer who is bold in his wickedness earns the contempt of others. Verse 10, he says, if you faint in the day of adversity, your strength is small. Deliver those who are drawn towards death, and hold back those stumbling to the slaughter. If you say, surely we did not know this, does not he who weighs the hearts consider it? He who keeps your soul, does he not know it? And will he not render to each man according to his deeds? Here we are encouraged to be bold. First, the best test of a person's worth is how he behaves under pressure. If he gives up when the going gets tough, he does not have what it takes, Solomon says in verse 10. When innocent people are being led off to gas chambers, ovens, or other modes of execution, when unborn babies are destroyed in abortion mills, it is inexcusable to just stand by and not try to do anything, Solomon says in verse 11. The follower of wisdom should deliver those who are taken to death and should rescue those who are going to the slaughterhouse. Verse 11 is the Old Testament counterpart to the New Testament question, who is my neighbor? And the answer is the same. Everyone is my neighbor, regardless of how well I know him. I may want to turn away from someone who is in trouble, but the Lord will hold me accountable for how I respond. It is useless to plead ignorance, he says in verse 12. Someone said, the hottest places in hell are reserved for those who, in a time of great moral crisis, maintained their neutrality. The Bible says that the Lord will render to every man according to his work. In verses 13 to 22, we have more instruction about wisdom. We see five things in those verses there. First, we see that wisdom is delightful in verses 13 and 14. Honey is used here as a symbol of wisdom. Both are beneficial. Both are sweet to the taste. Verse 13, so shall the knowledge of wisdom be to your soul, Solomon says in verse 14. If you have found it, there is hope that will not be cut off for you. In other words, the man who finds wisdom is assured of a bright future and the realization of all his hopes. And that is delightful. So wisdom is delightful, 13 and 14. Number two, wisdom is resilient. It is tough, verses 15 and 16. Do not lie in wait, O wicked men, against the dwelling of the righteous. Do not plunder his resting place, for a righteous man may fall seven times and rise again, but the wicked shall fall by one calamity. So the crooked person is warned against trying to plunder the home of a righteous man in verse 15. He may fall into trouble. He may fall to disaster seven times, but he will recover each time, verse 16. The wicked, on the other hand, stumbled to his ruin in one single misfortune. One blow is enough to crush him forever. But the righteous person bounces back again and again. Number three, wisdom is humble. Verses 17 and 18. Do not rejoice when your enemy falls. Do not let your heart be glad when he stumbles, lest the Lord sees it and it displeases him, and he turn away his wrath from him. So a man of good character should never rejoice when trouble catches up with his adversary, or be happy to see him stumble. Verse 17. If the Lord sees anyone arboring a rejoicing, vindicative spirit, he will consider that spirit more punishable than the guilt of the enemy, Solomon says in verse 18. The gloater becomes the greater sinner, and God becomes more concerned to bring him down than the other one. Number four, wisdom is patient. Verses 19 and 20. Do not worry because of evildoers, nor be envious of the wicked, for there will be no prospect for the evil man. The lamp of the wicked will be put out. Once again, we are warned not to get all upset over the apparent success of evildoers and not to envy the wicked in verse 19. This time, the reason given is that the prospects of the ungodly are very bad. Verse 20, they have nothing good to look forward to. Instead, the light of their life will be extinguished. So they don't have a bright future ahead of them. So don't envy them. And then number 5, the last one, wisdom is respectful. Verses 21 and 22, my son, fear the Lord and the king. Do not associate with those given to change, the unstable people. For their calamity will rise suddenly, and who knows the ruin those two can bring. So this proverb teaches reverence and respect for the Lord and for the king as his representative. It also warns against those who are out to change institution, change government, trying to overthrow government, verse 21. Both types of rebellion will bring sudden and unimaginable disaster on the guilty one, verse 22. The Christian is taught to obey human government as long as he can do so, without compromising his loyalty to the Lord. But if a government orders him or her to disobey the Lord, then he or she should refuse and humbly take the consequences. Under no circumstances should he join any plot to overthrow a government. That is true. Solomon's brother did try to overthrow his father. Verse 23, now we have the second part. After the warnings of the wise, now we have the sayings of the wise. He says that these things also belong to the wise. It is not good to show partiality in judgment. He who says to the wicked, you are righteous, him the people will curse. Nations will abhor him. But those who rebuke the wicked will have delight, and a good blessing will come upon them. He who gives a right answer kisses the lips. So it is despicable, a despicable thing to show partiality when judging matters of right and wrong. Verse 23, I would not want to be in the robes of some of the judges today in the United States. They will face the judge, and they won't like it. Godly wisdom shows no partiality in respect to the administration of justice. Such respect of person is forbidden in the law. You can read Leviticus chapter 19, and you can read Deuteronomy chapter 16, and God clearly said, don't do things. The judge who acquits the guilty will be cursed by the people, and he will be hated by nations, Solomon says in verse 24. Miscarriages of justice make citizens feel insecure. On the other hand, the judges who rebuke sin, they will be rewarded by God, and they will be blessed by men, verse 25. Those who render honest, impartial verdicts will win the kiss of approval from the people. That's a token of friendship. Verse 26. In verses 27 to 29, we see three things. First, we see preparing for marriage. You never thought you could see that in the Bible. That's in verse 27. Then we see shunning false accusation in verse 28. And we see avoiding seeking revenge in verse 29. Just as a man must clear trees and cultivate the land before building a house and get livestock, so he should get his own life in order before getting married and having a family. Verse 27, Prepare your outside work, make it fit for yourself in the field, and afterwards build your house. This proverb is a warning against rushing into marriage with all its responsibilities before a person is spiritually, emotionally, and financially prepared. The importance of having our priorities straight. Partial preparation is no preparation at all. So before you have a family, you clear the land, you build a house, you get the thing in order. Now you're ready to bring a wife in the picture. But under no circumstances should anyone bring false accusation against his neighbor or spread lies about him. Verse 28. Even if the neighbor has really done those things, there is no excuse for returning evil for evil or seeking revenge. Verse 29. Do not say, I will do him just as he's done to me. I will render to the man according to his work. Do not render. Vengeance is mine, says the Lord. The sin that he has done is against God. Then verse 30 to 34, we have another little story from Solomon. He said, I went to the field of the lazy, and by the vineyard of the men devoid of understanding. And there it was, all overgrown with thorns. Its surface was covered with thorns. Its stone wall was broken down. When I saw it, I considered it well. I looked on it and received instruction. A little sleep, a little slumber, a little folding of the hand to rest. So your poverty will come like a prowler, and your want will come like an armed man. So in the closing verses of chapter 24, the subject of laziness is brought up again. Solomon must have a problem with lazy people. He must have been surrounded with them. He is addressing them a lot in this book of Proverbs. The method used here is a short moral story, similar to those found earlier. Remember when we were in chapter 4 and chapter 7, he used little stories like this. So Solomon recounts his own experience, whether real or fictional, in order to make a point. There are three parts. First, there is the observation in verses 30 and 31. Then there's the lesson in verses 32 and 33. And then we have the conclusion in verse 34. It appears that Solomon passed by the lazy man's vineyard, verse 30, and saw that it was all overgrown with thorns, verse 31. Plants were overgrown. The stone wall was in ruin. Solomon learned a lesson at the farm of the lazy men. There was a lesson in this, in verse 32. When anyone asks for just a little more sleep, verse 33, a few more winks, a few more yawns, you can be sure that poverty will overtake him like an armed robber, he says in verse 34. Without discipline and diligence, a person ends up in poverty. When we yield to laziness in spiritual matters, our life, our vineyard, becomes infested with the works of the flesh, thorns, needles. There is no fruit for God. Our spiritual defenses, the wall, defenses are down, and the devil gains a foothold. The result of our laziness and relapsing is poverty of soul. It can be applied spiritually as well as physically. The main lesson for this chapter 24, if wicked people prosper, we should not be inclined to do as they do. They have no real joy. Their prosperity is only for now. There is no hope for them in the world to come. Next week, our journey will continue. There are only 7 chapters left, so read chapters 25 and 26. 2 things really stand out for me tonight. And the first one is the importance of planning. So many people start things and fail. But the importance of planning, either in building or getting married, either physically or spiritually. First things first. It is very important to have our priorities straight. Many have jumped into marriage without preparation, and it ended up to be a great disaster. So listen to what Solomon is saying here, the importance of planning. Another thing that I see, the danger of laziness. The wise person works while there is an opportunity to work. He does not live for ease and pleasure. He does not look for excuses to just sit down and take it easy. The lazy person, Solomon said, will end up with nothing. Just a matter of time, little slumber, little folding of the arms, and then you end up with nothing. So may the Lord be with you. May the Lord bless each and every one of you. May He bless your week, your work starting tomorrow, and may He help you. May He show you the importance of planning, and may He help you to fight the danger of laziness. In Jesus' name we pray. Amen.